With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
This is Jeff T from the Club 520 podcast. When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. When you see the blue check mark that says authenticity guaranteed, that means real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch, down to the sole. They even smell them because nothing says fresh like the scent of real kicks. So kick back and relax. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal with eBay authenticity guaranteed. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hey, if you guys like to cook outdoors, and you oughta, you should check out the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle. So this is a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned with food-safe oils and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge, reaching all the way up to 500 degrees. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle.
Time to look ahead to the 2023 running backs. Let's talk to the pros. Hello, everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I am Ryan Warmly, joined here by a couple of Andrews, I guess a couple of Massachusetts Andrews. I didn't get the memo that that's what I should change my name to for this show. Andrew Erickson and Andrew Cooper. Erickson, I will start with you. We're talking about some running backs here today. But before we get into that, we have to talk about the GOAT. Tom Brady announced this morning that he's retiring for good this time, we assume. What were your initial takeaways from that?
I mean, he did it. He was on the beach. He could hear the wind, you know, flowing through his 45, 46-year-old hair, that he was ready to lace him up. And, I mean, he seemed genuine in the post, that he seemed like he was going to be done here. I'm not sure it was worth it to have this extra season, considering he, like, lost his family. I don't know. Maybe this is his comeback tour with his family, but... You know, Tom Brady is the greatest of all time. And I really hope that this is the end for him. I think that he was kind of dragging this out longer than it needed to be, in my opinion. This past year, we kind of saw a down year from him, even if it wasn't always about him. I think that the team around him wasn't as good as it has been in previous years in Tampa Bay. So I'm looking forward to kind of seeing how he evolves. Does he end up going into the booth with Fox? Greg Olsen is the big loser out of this, along with everyone on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense. But yeah, happy for Brady that he's moving on. I'm excited to see what he does in this next step of his life.
I know he's literally Tom Brady, but you can't take Greg Olsen out of that number one spot on Fox. He is so good as a color commentator. I am blown away by him every time he calls the game. I'm really looking forward to the Super Bowl. Our big guest today, Andrew Cooper at Coop A Fiasco on Twitter. He's the lead NFL analyst at Fantasy Alarm. Coop, what was your reaction? I didn't actually ask you. I assume you are a Patriots fan being from Massachusetts.
Yes, of course. Tom, he must have known that a couple New England Andrews were coming on the show today because he wanted to give us a little content. I was live on my morning show. We have a show on the Better Sports Network from 7 to 10 a.m. So my reaction was to get up and throw on my Tom Brady jersey, say a little something about him. So it's going to be sad to see him go, the best of all time. But I think Erickson said it best there, that it's time. So, you know, got to let him do his thing.
Yeah, and I think throwing on the Tom Brady jersey is a perfectly reasonable reaction. There's no better way to show your sport and memory for the guy that brought you guys a lot of great memories, brought me as a Ravens fan a lot of unfortunate memories. Like I mentioned, we were talking about the running backs today. It's sort of a way too early 2023 rankings. We're going to talk about the early ECR. Obviously, these are pretty nebulous this time of year. It's February 1st right now, so these are going to change a lot with free agency and the draft and just our own opinions and research. But it's still helpful and informative to dive into it now. So we're going to run through, ask some questions of you guys about these early rankings. We'll jump right into it with the first one. At the top of the show, we're going to start with the top of the rankings. Christian McCaffrey, Austin Eckler, Jonathan Taylor, and Saquon Barkley are the top four right now in half-point PPR ECR rankings. Over the last 3 years, though, at least one of the top four running backs in ECR has failed to deliver a RB1 season. So in your very early opinion, Erickson, which of those four, again, McCaffrey, Eckler, Taylor, and Barkley, has the best chance of not living up to that RB1 status in 2023?
I think it's probably either Jonathan Taylor or Saquon Barkley. I think Jonathan Taylor's situation with the Indianapolis Colts is, like, who's the quarterback? Like, what's the state of the offensive line? You know, he's coming off an injury plague season. So there's question marks there with Saquon Barkley. You know, does his usage change if he comes back to the Giants on a bigger deal? Like, he was a free agent, you know, entering this past year. So the Giants had every reason to just ride him to the ground because it didn't matter. because if he got hurt again, they're like, all right, well, we're not re-signing this guy. So it's between those two. I think that McCaffrey and Eckler, if they're both healthy, I mean, we saw McCaffrey, what he could do in this 49ers offense, be, you know, the RB1 essentially. Maybe he's not getting the same type of every down usage, but he's super efficient. I mean, that touchdown run he had against the Eagles was just absolutely bonkers because he's just so talented. He's still under 27 years old. Eckler is still going to catch just so many freaking passes no matter what, especially with Kellen Moore now coming in as the OC for the Chargers. So I think it's definitely Taylor or Saquon. I think I'd probably lean more towards Saquon, especially if they do sign, he resigns with the Giants. They may want to, you know, make sure that he has shelf life if they do give him the contract, if he's a franchise tag. And JT is a free agent after this year. So I expect the Colts, regardless of the situation, to ride him into the ground pretty much no matter what.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the offensive coordinator change in Los Angeles. Not that we expect that to have too big of an impact on Eckler, but Eckler also is the oldest guy. Does that sort of weigh into this at all for you, Coop? Or are you agreeing with Erickson that it's probably Taylor or Barkley?
Well, I do agree with Erickson that there's most uncertainty with Taylor or Barkley. But let's say, you know, the Colts manage to bring in a good QB. Let's say they bring in an Aaron Rodgers and Barkley ends up in a good spot. If, you know, they end up with ideal situations, I think of these guys, Eckler is the one that I'm picking to not potentially end up there. When you look at what happened in the playoffs this year, they could not run the ball in the second half. And Austin Eckler is a guy that's never had a 1,000-yard rushing season. So there's a real possibility that they do bring in another guy and make that a mixed backfield. I feel like they've kind of tried to do that in the past with guys like Josh Kelly, didn't really work out. And now the other thing is I look at the top games for Austin Eckler, where he had these massive blow up games, 16 targets at Denver, 15 targets at Arizona. You go back and look at those games, the 16 target game, no Keenan Allen, 15 targets at Arizona, no Mike Williams, 12 targets at Seattle, Keenan Allen leaves with an injury. You know, the 12 targets in San Francisco, Mike Williams and Keenan Allen didn't play. Basically, in every one of these 10 target games he had, there was no Mike Williams, no Keenan Allen, or both. So to me, a little too much uncertainty with the new OC coming in and the possibility that he ends up being, you know, a split back for the rest of his career at age 28, the way that he kind of did to Melvin Gordon.
And Erickson, are these the right four to be? They're currently alone in the tier one of the early 2023 rankings at running back. Is this the right four? Would you add in Henry? Would you take any of them out in terms of just how you're ranking them right now?
I have these guys in the same in my top four. I think the only other players that you could probably put in the conversation would be Breece Hall and Bijan Robinson, just based on when we get more information on Breece Hall's injury and Bijan Robinson, you know, what his draft capital ends up being and what team he goes to. I think that the guy, as we'll talk about him a little bit later, but I mean, he has that talent to be in an RB1 right away.
And Coop, of these top four running backs, how many of them or any others would you take ahead of Justin Jefferson in a draft next season? And also, does that number change if you're talking about half PPR versus PPR?
The answer is none of them. And it doesn't change in half or full PPR. Justin Jefferson is just the guy. Right. For the longest time, because I've been playing this game for a long time, it was all running backs in the first round. When I first started playing, any of you guys, if you played back in the early 2000s, it was literally 12 running backs. That was the first round. You know what I mean? And it was good picks back then because it wasn't split. Now there's a little more splits. And the first time I ever considered a wide receiver first overall was Antonio Brown. When he was just the guy, he was the number one wide receiver in fantasy 4 years in a row. And whenever it was third down or whenever they needed a big play, or if it was fourth and 20, you knew where the ball was going. And Justin Jefferson is that guy. And it's even scarier where I sit here and it's fourth and 15. And I'm like, you don't feel comfortable with Justin Jefferson out there. You're like, they're going to get this, right? Like when the Patriots are playing the Vikings earlier this year on Thanksgiving, I'm sitting there every single play. I'm like, oh, third and 12, we're in trouble here. Cause they have Justin Jefferson, you know? So that's the kind of guy I want on my team. I want this guy that is, he's the go-to in every situation. Guy's an animal. So I'll take him first overall in every format.
Yeah, I mean, that catch in the Bills game, which was like obviously one of the greatest catches we've ever seen, that will just be etched into my memory forever. And I will never think, like you said, that they are out of it. Well, that's why it was so disappointing when Kirk Cousins just like checked down 3 yards and they need fourth and eight at the end of the playoff game. Because it's like, you have Justin Jefferson. Just throw the ball up and let him make a play. Erickson, I know you did the wide receiver show with Joey P, who was a big proponent of taking Justin Jefferson number one this past year. I know you have talked about how Jamar Chase can kind of be that game-breaking talent, so it might not even be Jefferson, but are you taking either of those wide receivers ahead of this group of running backs?
Yeah, I'm taking both Jefferson and Chase. And I think that we should really, you know, categorize Chase and Jefferson in their own tier, not just as like, oh, that you could just draft a receiver in the like number one overall, number two overall. Like, these guys are historically breaking records every single year, because this isn't just, oh, you're just drafting receiver number one. You're drafting guys who are breaking records every single year. Justin Jefferson, you know, entering final 3 years. Oh, he holds the record for most receptions, most receiving. Like, every year he's just going to break a new record because it's just the most of anyone's done in that years leading up to the past season. So that's why I think that those two are just clearly in their own tier, and they should be the number one, number two pick in all drafts.
So if you're comfortable taking a receiver over them, Cooper Kupp, would he, you know, even assuming he's coming back healthy, would it apply to him too? Or you're taking this group of running backs as soon as those two wide receivers are off the board, Erickson?
I think the running backs become in the conversation. Like, things haven't been finalized yet. You know, if it's a PPR, is it half PPR? I think there are question marks. You know, Cooper Kupp's coming off an injury and he's a little bit older, so there are question marks there. But I think that Jefferson and Chase are still above every running back.
Before we get to the next question, let me remind everyone to get ahead of the game with our 2023 NFL draft guide at fantasypros.com/draft guide, with player profiles, prospect mock drafts, big boards, and coverage of the Senior Bowl and NFL Combine. We've got you covered on all things related to the NFL draft for free. Premium subscribers also get access to our NFL draft position rankings. So go premium today if you haven't already, and check out our 2023 NFL draft guide now at fantasypros.com/draft guide. Ken Walker, he's currently RB6 in early ECR rankings. He only finishes RB17 and half PPR points per game last season. Of course, that was much higher after Penny went down for the season in weeks 5 or 6. But Walker also only had 34 targets in those 14 games he played last season. So is it a little early for managers to be this bullish on him and have him as a unanimous top 10 running back already, Coop?
Well, so they have him at RB6, right? And that's where we're looking at for ECR. You said he was RB17 and a half points per game. But like you said, if you take out the games where he split with Penny, and you take out week 13 where he got hurt mid-game, so you're only looking at games where he played more than 50% of the snaps, he was averaging just under 16 half PPR points, which happens to be RB6 in points per game, right? So I don't think it's crazy to take him there. My favorite stat on him is that the Seahawks only had 9 run plays inside the 5-yard line. Can you boys guess how many of those Kenneth Walker handled?
7?
9. Every single one. Every single one. He's the only player in the league that had a 100% carry rate inside the 5-yard line. So he gets that side of it. But if it's full PPR, I think you do got to look at the receptions and maybe move him down a little bit. 6 is a little rich for me, but I don't think it's crazy to draft him at the back end of the first round or early second, or have him within your top 10.
Yeah. Erickson, how much does the lack of targets relative to other, you know, big name running backs worry you? I know this is something that you and Debro went back and forth on a lot about Breece Hall versus Ken Walker in the offseason heading into rookie drafts last year.
Well, I mean, I was right. I mean, Breece Hall was better in the passing game, so chalk up a W for me. But no, Ken Walker still flashed more than I thought he would as a rookie, as a receiver. Like, he did have a couple games where he had 5+ targets. He had a massive target game against the Buccaneers in Germany. So the fact that that's on paper, it matters. Like, no, it's not going to be consistent, but a lot of rookie running backs come into the league, even ones that are more decorated as college pass catchers. James Cook, where was his receiving role? Like, that's all they talked about in the draft was James Cook. Oh, he's a great receiver. Oh, what do you have? Devin Singletary. No, out-targeted James Cook again. No. So Kenneth Walker, I think, showed enough that his receiving role will expand heading into his second year, another year in the system. DJ Dallas, I believe, is a free agent. So Travis Homer, like, what are these other running backs going to do? Like, when push comes to shove, Ken Walker is out there on the field playing 70% of the snaps, which means he's running the most routes, which means he's going to see targets. I think it's so important to note, like, the Seahawks are super top heavy when it comes to their targets. It's Metcalf and it's Lockett. And then you have tight ends and then Ken Walker. Like, they don't have a third wide receiver that they use. So Ken Walker, you can see taking on that type of role versus a guy like Travis Etienne. You know, Etienne, the biggest thing with him not seeing targets was because Zay Jones, now Calvin Ridley, Evan Ingram. Like, there's just more Christian Kirk. There were more weapons to feed in the passing game, whereas Seattle, there's really only those top two guys. And then Ken Walker, you could argue he could be the third guy there. So I think his receiving role will increase. So I'm with consensus here, having him up inside the top 8.
Let's actually just get to Breece Hall now. He was RB8 in half PPR scoring points per game last season prior to that injury. Right now, he's RB12 in the early rankings. If I was able to guarantee you, not that he'd be healthy for the full year, since we can't guarantee that for anybody, but that he's 100% healthy by the start of week one next season, how aggressively are you ranking him, Coop?
I mean, he has to be an RB1. And like you said at the beginning, there's a lot that's going to shake out here. But, you know, depending where Saquon Barkley goes, depending what happens with the Patriots backfield, I mean, there's a he could get moved up as high. I mean, Josh Jacobs is up in the air, so he could go as high as what, 6, 7, 8? This guy looked electric. So if we're getting that guy back in this offense, who they went out, and I'm a Patriots fan, so it hurts me to say that they went out and they've been crushing it with their draft picks, right? And they took Elijah Vera Tucker, who's a guy I really like that can play guard. He could play tackle, but going to be a great guard at this level. They got Mekhi Becton. They went out and they took Laken Tomlinson from, I think he came over from the Chargers, I think it was. Doesn't matter where he came from. He's a Jet now. So they have a good line. They went out, got two tight ends that could block. I mean, everything is in the perfect place for this guy to come out and crush on the ground. And we already know that he's got top tier hands. So yeah, Breece Hall, if you could tell me that he was healthy, I'd move him way up. I have to have him down a little bit just because what we saw happen with J.K. Dobbins, with Gus Edwards. It's not as simple as, all right, you're healthy, good to go. You know, you got to work your way back up. So, but if you could promise me that, then I'd be all on board. And I'm not sure if you guys saw, but I saw a little video of him on the treadmill. He had this kind of suspension bubble around him, bubble boy thing going on. But, you know, he was running, man. He was running. So pretty intriguing at this time of year to see that.
Yeah, the Adrian Peterson recovery, however many years ago it was, from the torn ACL, just like kind of ruined knee injuries for other running backs, because now everybody wants to see them get back so fast.
Well, Jamal Charles had one of those too. He tore his ACL and came back and was a freaking monster.
Yeah, freaks of nature, really. Erickson, what do you think about Hall in terms of, if you could guarantee health by week one, how aggressive are you being in his ranking?
So I have him right now at RB10, and like I said before, I would move him up inside the top five. Like, if he was just healthy, like, he would probably be like my number one or number two running back. Like, but the fact that you're getting an injury discount, I think, should be baked into his ADP and the ECR. But I want to be aggressive on Breece Hall. Like, I know that we talked about J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards, but those weren't just simple ACL injuries. Those were ACL, LCL, PC, like multiple ligament knee injuries. And everything I've researched is that Breece Hall's was a clean ACL injury. Like, that's it. So I think that people are going to be hesitant because of the J.K. Dobbins thing. Even though the injuries aren't the same, they're just going to see knee injury and think, oh, no, well, it's going to be J.K. Dobbins all over again. I think there is a player that's going to be like J.K. Dobbins injury, as we'll get into, but that guy's not Breece Hall. So Breece Hall, you want to draft because, you know, he misses week one, comes back week two, looks healthy. You have a top five running back on your team that you maybe got in the second round.
So even with the injury questions, like right now he's behind Mixon, Najee Harris, Travis Etienne. Should he be ahead of those guys, or still you're hesitant enough with the injury that he should be behind those guys?
I think he should definitely be ahead of Mixon and Najee for sure. Mixon could get cut from the Bengals based on his salary cap hit. Najee is just a floor play, in my opinion. And I have Etienne ranked ahead of Breece Hall, because I do think Etienne offers a lot of explosiveness in an ascending offense, and he is healthy. So I do like Etienne a little bit more than Breece Hall at this moment. But over those two veteran guys, I mean, I'm calling Najee Harris a veteran at this point because that's kind of how he runs. Yeah, I'm definitely taking the youth with Breece Hall.
Very quickly, Erickson, where would you have Hall in dynasty leagues right now at running back?
I think he's like RB5. I think he's RB4. He's like next to Jonathan Taylor, next to Bijan Robinson, who I think is two. And I think Ken Walker I have ahead of Breece Hall just because he is currently healthy.
Before we move on with today's show, I'd like to take a moment to talk about FanDuel. New FanDuel Sportsbook players, your day is about to get 20% better. It's Super Bowl season, and FanDuel Sportsbook is providing you with a great new offer once you sign up with FanDuel through FanDuel.com/FPSBK. Upon your signup, each new user will receive a no-sweat first bet up to $3,000. That's a big-time two-for-one deal from both ourselves at Fantasy Pros and our partners at FanDuel. I love using FanDuel Sportsbook because I love same game parlays, and they are the best place to place those bets. It's just more fun when you have a little extra skin in the game and can root for multiple different angles on the same game. It makes watching any game extra fun. That includes the Super Bowl, but there are tons of new markets you can bet on with FanDuel Sportsbook, including the Super Bowl and NHL and NBA. Betting never sleeps all season long, and we are looking at an awesome slate of games for the NFL, NBA, and NHL action in the near future. My favorite matchup, of course, you know it's going to come from the Super Bowl. And I'm actually going to keep this one simple. It's not even a same game parlay as much as I love those. It's Chiefs plus 1.5, which is what you can get as of this recording on FanDuel Sportsbook. You're telling me that I can get Patrick Mahomes plus the points. I know the Eagles are great. I love this Eagles roster. They're a really good team. It wouldn't surprise me to see them win. But anytime, it's just a fundamental betting rule. Anytime I'm getting Patrick Mahomes plus points as an underdog, I am taking it. Experience season-long wins without the season-long waits. Sign up with FanDuel Sportsbook and receive a no-sweat first bet up to $3,000 by heading to FanDuel.com/FPSBK. That's FanDuel.com/FPSBK. Disclaimers, age and location restrictions apply. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires after 30 days. Josh Jacobs, he's running back 8 right now, absolutely tore through the NFL and fantasy leagues in 2022 after his option was declined by the Raiders. So he might not be back in Vegas. We don't know yet. He led the league in rushing yards. He finishes RB3. Is there an RB needy team that you guys would most want to see him land? And also, Coop, where are you ranking him if he does stay in Vegas?
Yeah, so my number one spot right now for running backs is the Miami Dolphins. And they actually have no one under contract, as crazy as that is. Literally no one. There's one player that they could easily bring back. That's Salvin Ahmed. He's a restricted free agent, which, as we know, is practically indentured servitude in this league. Right? It's like, if they want you back, you come back and you play for us and you can't negotiate with that. You know what I mean? It's like ridiculous. The other one is the exclusive rights free agent, where it's like, we pay you the bare minimum salary. You can't even talk to anybody else. Like, I don't know who at the CBA. Yeah, we got to stop letting the veteran players be the head of the player union, because they just sit down and they're like, okay, we'll take this for us. And yeah, you can do whatever you want with the young guys, right? Somebody's got to step in there and help these guys out. But that's the reality for these Dolphins. And it's like, you know, they could bring back Raheem Mostert, but he's like 30. They could bring back Jeff Wilson, who's 27. Or they could go out, get that last luxury pick as part of this rebuild and grab a Josh Jacobs or a Saquon Barkley or draft a Bijan Robinson to go behind Teron Armstead, who is one of the best left tackles in the league. And now all of a sudden, this team's terrifying, right? So that's the spot where I want to see somebody good go. They never do. Right. We always say like, oh, put a running back on the Chiefs. That'll be great. Never happens. But in this situation, that's what I want. And if it does happen, I mean, Josh Jacobs on this Dolphins running behind Teron Armstead with the weapons they have and Mike McDaniel calling the plays after what he showed in San Francisco and what he showed here, even with kind of scrapping it together, cutting Chase Edmonds and going to find his own guys. Right. Like, just imagine that. For me, I'm top five. Got to be almost right.
Erickson, is Miami also your favorite spot for Jacobs, and how much does his landing spot impact where you'll be ranking him?
I think it matters significantly because he got all the volume that he could handle in his last year in Las Vegas, and that just wasn't the case, you know, all the years prior to that. You know, Jacobs had been productive leading up to this season, so we knew he had it in him, but it was a matter of, okay, well, is this new coaching staff going to give him the volume? And they did this past year. So I still think if he goes back to the Raiders, I think that's still a good landing spot for him, because we know he'll be used on every down in this Josh McDaniels offense. And I agree that Miami is definitely my number one. I think the other names you could list off as potential spots where you could just see him being at least a lead back, the Falcons, Eagles, Bears, Texans, Bills, and like Coop mentioned, the Chiefs as well. Like, those are all like potential spots where he could at least come in and be 250 touches.
I got one more stat on that one. You know, I mentioned the Kenneth Walker nine carries inside the five. He had all nine, which 100% is going to lead the league. The guy who was second in the league, Josh Jacobs. They had 12 carries inside the five. He had 11. That's 91%. So they were just like, it's all you. And sometimes when you see a stat like that, like, I actually don't have it in front of me who had the other carry, but it could have been like Derek Carr QB sneak, in which case, you know, he virtually had them all. So when Andrew Erickson says they gave it to him, he was the dude.
And one thing to keep in mind with all these running backs in free agency is that There's also a lot of rookies coming in. Everybody knows Bijan Robinson already. He's a clear number one guy, but there's a lot of depth in this running back class. There's going to be a lot of teams with very different looking backfields going into next season. So that's just something to pay attention to, whether you're in dynasty or redraft. And it'll be a really fun new landscape going into 2023. Tier three in our ECR is where we start to get into some serious questions with pretty much every running back in this group. It starts at Najee Harris at RB 10, goes all the way down to Aaron Jones at RB 18. Of that group of guys, who is at the most risk in this tier? And I don't want to count Bijan because he's obviously never played a snap. We have really high hopes. We're going to get into him in more detail a little bit later. Excluding him from the conversation in that tier three group, who has the most risk, Erickson?
So I'm not going to mention the guy I actually think has the most risk because we're going to talk about him separately. So I will opt for my other running back here. I think it's Dalvin Cook for me. Like Cook, he got like all the usage you wanted from a top tier running back. And, you know, he was fine. You know, he was an RB1 this past year, but in terms of his efficiency, his numbers were way down, despite the fact he had the league's fourth highest opportunity share. Like Alexander Mattison, like never did anything. And Dalvin Cook was healthy like all year long. Like we never had the, oh, you got to jam in Alexander Mattison and all your DFS lineups week. Like that never actually happened because Dalvin Cook was healthy all year long. And yet he finished dead last in terms of rushing EPA. He was dead last in terms of rushes for, or first in rushes of zero or negative yardage. So he wasn't really productive. We saw the receiving usage still be there for him, but you know, getting up there in age, I just would rather be a year too early on some of these older veteran running backs than a year too late. And if he's going to cost a back end second round pick or an early third round pick, well, you know what that's the start of? The RB dead zone. Like you're starting to now cast doubt into Dalvin Cook, where he's always been a top two or top, you know, first or second round pick. You know, why is he falling into the third round? Why is he now available in the fourth round? Because people realize that, hey, he's getting older. And hey, he was not good last year. He was not efficient on the ground. So are we starting to see the wear and tear on his body really start to pile up? So Dalvin Cook for me is someone that I'm not actively trying to target just because I'm concerned that the wheels are starting to fall off a little bit.
Yeah, I fully agree. He is one of the guys in this range that I think it's really unlikely I will roster in any leagues next year, frankly. He's just not the type of guy I typically go after in that range. Coop, what do you think?
Now, when I talked to Pat Fitzmaurice about coming on, I thought I made it clear that I only want softball questions. I don't want any difficult RB red zone questions. It's not, this wasn't in my contract to be asked a difficult question. But I'll weigh in. Dalvin Cook definitely scares me. I mean, this is a guy that outside of last year has basically hurt every single year of his career. So he's up there for sure for me. The other one, which, you know, the analytics community might have to plug their ears for this one, but I'm a little worried about Tony Pollard. There are a few narratives on this one, and Erickson did mention just now guys that have that Dalvin Cook had a lot of negative carries a win for negative yards. Tony Pollard in his career has had 17.5% of his carries go for either zero or negative yards. That's getting stuffed quite a bit. And when you put that in, when you put that in perspective with Zeke Elliott getting 16 of the goal line carries within the 5 yard line, with him only getting six, and how it's been divvied up, and the fact that even though Zeke is the guy that has to carry the ball on third and one or fourth and one or fourth and two, Zeke is his percentage, and we you know, in our mind he gets stuffed all the time. His percentage is like 14% for his whole career, and for Pollard's career, I looked at it from 2019 on, still 14%. So he's does a better job of getting those yards. I worry that wherever Tony Pollard does end up going, or if he ends up staying, which would probably be equally as bad, but if he goes somewhere else, that they're going to figure out the same thing and say, hey, you know what? We really like this guy. He's great in space. We need somebody else to punch it in. So that's what worries me a little bit with Pollard. The upside is there, of course, you know, that if he does get the full role and works on that part of his game, but there's some concern there that people are going to go crazy moving him way up their rankings because of the analytics and those numbers that we've liked all this time.
Yeah, I might have been a tough question, but I think that's a great answer because I think Pollard, he's somebody that I certainly like. And obviously, like you said, the analytics certainly point to him being a really successful running back if given a greater workload. But also, like, I just feel like the hype is going to be really strong on him to the point that he's going to continue to move up rankings, especially if he ends up in a backfield where he's the clear number one guy. And I just think it's likely other people are going to be reaching on him sooner than I'll be comfortable with it. So I think that's a good answer. Before we move on with today's show, I'd like to take a second to talk about Ayr Medcare Network. We talk a lot about what makes winners on this show, and there's one thing that all the teams, coaches, and players have in common. and that's preparation. Planning is key in everyday life too, and a great way to be prepared for the unexpected is to join Air Medcare Network, America's largest air ambulance membership network. Air Medcare Network providers operate state-of-the-art helicopters that can respond to critically ill or injured patients who need emergency medical transport. These flights can be very expensive, but as an Air Medcare Network member, you won't see a bill for your flight only when flown by one of their providers. That's right, you'd pay nothing. You can become a member of Air Medcare Network for just $99 a year. And right now, our listeners can get up to an $80 MasterCard or Amazon e-gift card when they join and use offer code FANTASYPROS. That's FANTASYPROS with no spaces. Make financial peace of mind part of your game plan. Visit airmedcarenetwork.com/FANTASYPROS. Another guy that people often reach on earlier than I'm comfortable with is DeAndre Swift. Right now, he's RB14 in ECR. He's basically been like the most frustrating guy to own since he came into the league. His talent is so obvious, but he's had injuries. He's had not getting the kind of usage we'd like to see. He's never been higher than RB20 in his career. So are we being too optimistic with an RB14 ranking, or do you think we might see the usage change in 2023 and he finally has that true RB1 breakout season, Coop?
Now, it's tough with a guy like this. I'm actually right now working on a series where I'm breaking down each team by team, leading into free agency and kind of trying to figure out what I think they're going to do in free agency in the draft and how that might affect guys in Dynasty. The Lions are going to be the next team coming out tomorrow. So check that out over at Fantasy Alarm. And I've been looking at it, and even if Jamal Williams doesn't come back, I'm a little concerned that they might still treat Swift as a part-time guy. Like, he's been hurt every single year. They might not want to run him between the tackles. I talked earlier about how the ERFA, the exclusive rights free agents, they automatically come back, basically. Craig Reynolds is one of those players, so he'll be back no matter what. But if they bring Jamal back or bring another guy in, I'll be really concerned. And I hate to be that guy that sits here and is like, oh, I watched Hard Knocks, so I know something you don't, blah, blah, blah. We all, you know, most of us watch it, right? But if you do watch that and you get the vibe from Deuce Daly, who, you know, is obviously a great running back for the Eagles, seems like a great running back coach at this point. He doesn't seem to believe that DeAndre Swift believes in himself, right? You know what I'm talking, where he's like, he comes out and says to the other coaches in the coach meeting, like, we need to treat this guy like he's a star and get him to start believing that he's a star, because I think he can be, but that doesn't really inspire confidence in me. I want the guy that's walking around that is acting like a star and playing like a star all the time versus a guy where the coach needs to say, come on, buddy, you can do it. Like, I want the guy to be out there firing on all cylinders without that kind of thing. So I do worry a little bit about Swift and if he'll ever be the guy that we thought he would be, the guy that every down Le'Veon Bell, explosive pass catcher that, you know, does it all. So I am a little bit worried, but you have to take, the thing is, at the same time, I have to take him before I take other guys because I look at what he could be, and you can't pass on that, right? So he's a tough guy to rank for sure.
Erickson, where do you come down on Swift?
Yeah, so I have him at RB17. So I do think RB14 is definitely on the more optimistic side of things. And you pose the question, is his usage going to change? And if Jamal Williams is back, why would it change? Like, that's the question for me. And I thought that it could change this past year. I thought Swift could be this year's Austin Eckler. You know, Austin Eckler, you look at his career, not a lot of touchdowns to start his career, but super efficient as a pass catcher, which is basically what DeAndre Swift has been good at. But the touchdowns just aren't there. Jamal Williams scored 17 rushing touchdowns this past year.
Wild.
And it wasn't even like that bizarre because he had 41 plus carries inside the 10-yard line, which was like 12 more than the next closest guy.
Absurd.
So it's so clear that they want to use him, Jamal Williams, as that bruising red zone back and not Swift. So if he doesn't have that role, which if they bring Jamal Williams back under the same head coach, under the same offensive coordinator, then that's not going to change. So yeah, if people are just expecting something to change about Swift and ranking him basically almost as an RB1, then it's just going to be too expensive for me. And if I have to miss out on the talent, yeah, I'm going to have to miss out. And that sucks, but it hasn't beaten you at this point. I mean, if you've been fading Swift this entire time, then you've been more beneficial than not. So yeah.
Who will be the next crop of rookie running backs to take the league by storm? Find out with help from Derek Brown and Thor Nystrom, who are live in Mobile, Alabama at the 2023 Senior Bowl right now as we speak, where elite draft prospects are showcasing their talents and connecting with coaches and decision makers from all 32 NFL teams. The guys are going live this Thursday on the Fantasy Pros YouTube channel, where they'll be breaking down everything they've seen all week long alongside some of the brightest guests in the industry. Don't miss them live at 7 p.m. Eastern Thursday at youtube.com/fantasypros. Let's actually get into the most elite rookie coming into fantasy leagues next season. And that's Bijan Robinson, currently RB16 in ECR, the only rookie running back ranked even inside the top 30. And I'm guessing this answer is going to be the same for you, Coop, since you said this applies to all running backs, but what is his ideal landing spot? And then also, if he gets there, where are you ranking Robinson before he ever takes a snap?
Yeah, I mean, so again, there's kind of three types of spots available. There's teams that are wide open, Dolphins, Panthers, right? Like there's, you know, for the most part, they could just immediately be the guy. Then there's teams where they could replace a free agent who's leaving, right? With the Eagles and the Giants, we think about Miles Sanders and Saquon Barkley, but they could be gone, right? Same with the Raiders, the Bears. And then there's teams where if a guy like Bijan Robinson comes in, he just vaporizes what's there, right? Like Breece Hall, like we liked Michael Carter fine. Once they drafted Breece Hall, Michael Carter season was over, right? So there's a lot of situations where you look at it and say, okay, if he gets drafted by the Bills, James Cook is kind of cooked, right? If he gets drafted by the Chiefs, if he gets drafted by the Texans, I mean, even though we like Damian Pierce and we like Tyler Algier, if they bring in this other guy, it's over, right? I mean, it's the way it goes, man. So there's a lot of landing spots where he could be great for dynasty. For redraft, we want the teams that are ready to compete right now, where he can get, where they're going to find their way into the red zone a million times, like the 49ers did, like even honestly the Lions did this year, where they, you know, they made it down there like 40 times. So if you look at the Dolphins, the Bills, the Eagles, the Chiefs, those are the top four where if he were to go to one of those teams and be installed immediately as a starting running back, I mean, the guy could score 20 touchdowns. So in that, you know, in that moment, I know Pat Fitzmaurice is not scared to, you know, a Fantasy Pros guy. He's not scared to have him ranked as high as what? Like he's like, I'm like 6 or 7 or something like that. It's like wild. I see no reason why he would make it out of the first round if he does go to a team that's ready to be a top, you know, 10 team in touchdowns.
Erickson, do you also see Bijan as an RB1, like a top 12 guy, if he goes to the right team?
I think he could be. I have him as RB11, and I honestly don't even care where he goes. I just think that he's going to. He's just that good. Like this is like Saquon Barkley, Jonathan Taylor, Ezekiel Elliott, like talent coming into the NFL where you just don't ask questions. You just, the guy's just going to smash. And like, even if there's a veteran there, then that veteran is just going to, you know, he can get the starter reps to start the year. And then you're just going to get Bijan Robinson at a discount. Like he's going to force his way onto the field no matter what. Like, you know, a guy that we're not talking about enough of, I think, is his backup at Texas, who is actually a very good running back in his own right. But he never got to really play that much because of Bijan Robinson, just utter dominance at Texas. So I just think it almost doesn't matter to me who, because he's going to supplant whoever else is there and he's going to get his way onto the field. So I almost prefer him to like land in a spot where it's probably a better offense and maybe his opportunity doesn't look nearly as direct. Like, I know, like the Texans, for example, like the Texans would be more concerning for me because it's just a bad offense, in my opinion, versus obviously the touches would be there for him. But if he went to a team like, you know, the Eagles, let's say they bring back Miles Sanders, like, I don't care. like Bijan is going to put Miles Sanders on the bench. So I think ideally the Eagles would probably, and we see this a lot of times with these like Super Bowl teams, that they're the teams that are like, hey, you know, we can, you know, splurge a little bit on a running back because we're stacked everywhere else, especially with the Eagles, because they have like a flurry of picks that they can use. So, I mean, Bijan Robinson to the Eagles would just be crazy.
But if he ended up in Philly or like Baltimore or Chicago, would you be worried about being in an offense with a quarterback that likes to run that much, stealing a lot of those, you know, red zone carries and goal line carries?
So I'll answer this one because I read an article by a guy that I really trust his opinion. His name's Andrew Erickson. He's over at Fantasy Pros, and he wrote this article once. So I keep a list of articles that I really like and that I could pull stats out of. And congrats, Erickson. One of yours, it makes that cut, which is the one that you wrote on mobile quarterbacks, right? And their effect on the running game, where you did acknowledge that, and again, I should probably just have you explain what your research is on this. But essentially, the idea is that, yes, it does open things up in the running game a little bit, but the reduction in pass volume is, at the end of the day, the real killer, right? Where if I'm Drew Brees and Alvin Kamara standing there, I'm going to dump it over to him and say, you run with it. Whereas if I'm Lamar Jackson, I'm going to look at the running back and say, I'm running it. Why don't you go block somebody? So, you know, as far as your research goes, Erickson, that has helped me put this in perspective and at times avoid some of these guys who are going to carry the water up and down the field so that Jalen Hurts can drink it, right? So that does worry me a little bit.
No, I mean, I think that you hit the nail on the head. You did a great job summarizing it that, yeah, when you have a mobile quarterback, it does take away, you know, potential rushing attempts, but it also does matter what other weapons there are. So like in the case of the Bears, like what other weapons do they have to get the ball to? Like Cole Kmet, Darnell Mooney, Chase Claypool. Like, I mean, Bijan Robinson would still be super involved, you know, through all facets, even with Justin Fields also adding an element of rushing. So again, the talent is still super superior, in my opinion, with him, and any discount I could get on him because of a landing spot, I think you should just buy.
Yeah, and to be clear, like, I don't think Chicago is really in the conversation. I just mentioned them because they have the mobile quarterback. I think Philly, I did see him go to Baltimore in one early mock draft. I really don't think that's likely. I think Philly, of the guys with mobile quarterbacks, is the best chance. Erickson, everybody knows how you feel about Ramondre Stevenson. If Damian Harris, who's currently RB41 in ECR, leaves in free agency, how much higher are you moving up Mondre, who's currently RB17 in ECR? I'm assuming you think that's too low.
Yes, it is way too low because Damian Harris is not coming back. Like, it's not happening. Like, they drafted two rookies to replace him. He has not been healthy the last 2 years. Bill Belichick doesn't want that. Like, he's not been reliable. Like, that's the biggest thing with Damian Harris. He hasn't been reliable outside being really like an efficient goal line back for the Patriots. So I have Ramondre Stevenson at RB7. And I think that what we saw this past year, he can handle the workload, dynamic in space. He's a big running back that catches passes. Like, there are not that many guys that have that mold that Ramondre Stevenson does. So I think that he's very undervalued where he currently is. And I think that he would be a top eight running back for me if and when Damian Harris eventually leaves.
Coop, where do you land on Ramondre?
Yeah, so to be honest, Damian Harris isn't the one that scares me as much. I think at this point, I think he's gone, honestly, but Ramondre is just a better back, right? The only thing that worries me a little bit is that you bring Bill O'Brien back in and maybe he wants to go back to the heyday, 2007, 2011, where they were running that modified Earhart Perkins system that, you know, has been so famous there. During the last 20 years before Mondre, they've never had a back have 200 carries and 35 plus receptions in the same season. You have to go all the way back to Curtis Martin and, Robert Edwards. Remember Robert Edwards, Erickson, the guy, the rookie that he tore his knee up in a rookie sophomore game that they did at the Pro Bowl playing on sand. And it was never the same.
My gosh. Just
absolutely the worst possible idea, right? Like just the worst possible idea you could have. And that was the end of him. But since then, they've never had a guy that got both. And a lot of that is due to the system. So I hope that Bill O'Brien doesn't sit back and say, we have to go out and get ourselves a new Kevin Falk or James White or Danny Woodhead and split it up. Because if they don't do that, I have no problem with drafting him right where Erickson said at 7, 8, I mean, maybe even higher. The guy, I think he was second in targets for running backs, or he's way up there in targets. Depending how the backfield shakes out, he could easily be a top 5, 6 guy.
Speaking of guys with really bad injuries, last year we had Javonte Williams as RB14 entering the 2022 season under the impression that he was going to be that unquestioned number one guy in the backfield. Melvin Gordon is gone. We're again looking at Javonte as the full-fledged RB1, but of course he's down at RB19 because of that really bad injury. And I'm guessing, Erickson, this is the injury you were referring to earlier as that it looks a lot like the J.K. Dobbins one that could leak well into the 2023 season and happened later in the year than Dobbins did, which obviously happened in preseason before last year. So this could really like leak into the 2023 season in a really negative way. They also now have Sean Payton. So if he is healthy, you might see an Alvin Kamara type role in the backfield for him. So kind of where do you land on Javonte right now, trying to square the injury with the talent, with the opportunity that he has with the backfield and the coaching change?
Probably going to fade him. Like, if I had to stand my flag on a fade this year, it would be Javonte Williams. Look, ACL, PCL, LCL. Like, the multiple knee ligament injury for Javonte Williams causes a lot of problems. Like, this is not the typical just torn ACL injury. Okay, it's going to be 9 to 12 month recovery. Like, this can extend into the season. And we saw this with J.K. Dobbins. Like, this is the J.K. Dobbins injury you want to avoid. And yes, could he come back at some point and look productive by week 14? Sure. Like, if you want to wait for Javonte Williams for week 14 of the 2023 season, be my guest. But way too many question marks now with the injury, a new head coach coming in that has no allegiance to Javonte Williams whatsoever. You know who he might have allegiance to? Oh, that guy that they signed and was really productive down the stretch, Latavius Murray, who also played on the Saints, who also Sean Payton has played under, who also has a relationship with George Payton, who is the GM for the Denver Broncos. So I fully expect them to bring back Latavius Murray, and I think that he's still going to operate as a running back that you can use, even though he is older. He was productive last year. The only other running back they have under contract is Chase Edmonds, who they kind of just picked up off the scrap heap after they got rid of him in Miami. So you also posed in this question, you know, are they going to add another running back? And I think they have to add another running back. Their starting running back is coming off major knee surgery. So they have to add extra bodies to this backfield. And I think more often than not, I think that just putting Javonte Williams and be like, all right, he's going to be Sean Payton's Alvin Kamara. I think that that is just cookie cutter copy and paste analysis that is going to hold zero weight by the time the season shows up. So if right now, Javonte Williams would definitely be lower on than consensus.
Cookie cutter analysis. I'm just out here asking questions, man. I'm teeing it up for you to respond.
I'm just reading tomorrow's headlines. Javonte Williams, the next Alvin Kamara. No.
Coop, where do you come down? I mean, is the upside tantalizing enough for you to go after Javonte this year at what is clearly an injury-related discount, or are you also fading?
Yeah, I mean, I need like another 30 seconds to finish sending third round picks out to everyone in my league for Latavius Murray after just listening to Eric's on his tirade just now. Like, I just need a minute, really. Don't publish this until I get those offers out. Okay. That's the thing. Like, you look at Frank Gore, tore his ACL twice in college. They said he wasn't going to have a long career. Look how that worked out. Like, he's still an athlete right now. He's knocking people out in the boxing ring. Like, you know, that's the situation. And then you look at another example, Marcus Lattimore, who had the injury that Erickson's describing, and he didn't play a single down. So they're not all created equal. These ones that have the nerve damage, I really am just putting him on the shelf, and I'm waiting to see where things end up. If somebody can reasonably assure me that he's out there playing full speed and ready to go, that's when I'm going to start moving him up. But for now, it's got to be benefit of the doubt. I don't care what he tweets. We watched J.K. Dobbins come out and tweet that, you know, whatever he wanted to say about how he's got the Lord on his side, how he's progressing faster, how everyone's lying. It turns out that everyone wasn't lying, that he wasn't ready to go. So I need to see it. I'm in the same boat.
Let's talk about the guy that we keep comparing him to in Dobbins. And he obviously missed all of, you know, one season and then missed a large part of this last season and was ineffective early this last season. It was really only the last month or so that he started to look even close to the Dobbins of old. And even then, you could tell he didn't have that breakaway, you know, fifth gear, was not all the way back yet on a couple of his runs. So he did look a lot better. He's currently RB26 going into next season. Is he undervalued because people are still thinking about the injured Dobbins and we're kind of hoping and assuming he'll be back to quote unquote normal going into 2023, Erickson?
Yep. I think that he's definitely undervalued. I have him as a top 20 running back at RB19 because he's not injured right now. Like, this is exactly what happened with Saquon Barkley last year, where there was just like a delay because he'd just been hurt so much that we just kind of forgot that, oh, he's actually not hurt right now. Like, he's healthy entering the year. And then, oh, now he's a first round pick. Not to say that Dobbins is going to be a first-round pick, but he's going to be in that middle tier, fifth, sixth round, kind of like, oh, he sucked last year, like a lot of bitter taste in people's mouths. Oh, Lamar Jackson, he's going to hold out. He's going to play in the franchise tag. I don't want any part of this Ravens offense. They don't throw the ball enough. But all I see is, oh, yeah, the last five games, 6.6 yards per carry, 92 rushing yards per game on just 14 carries per game. So obviously you're not getting the receptions and targets that you'd like to see. But you're not paying for a running back in the second round. Like, you're paying for a uber efficient rusher in the sixth or seventh round potentially with J.K. Dobbins. So, yes, I'm definitely in on J.K. Dobbins another year removed from the injury because, yeah, right now he is not hurt. So I want to be buying the discount.
And I actually do think that in his range of outcomes, there is an RB1 type, like a top 12 type season. I wouldn't bet on it necessarily because they don't use him that much in the passing game. But Greg Roman is gone. They're bringing in a new offensive coordinator. They may build that into the game a little bit more. Obviously, we don't really know what's going to happen with Lamar. I fully expect him to be the quarterback next season at least. But they have also shown that they're more willing to run other guys. They like to get touchdowns to Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins. And Edwards is getting older now, too. So I think there is a possibility for a huge blow-up season from Dobbins. I think ranking him more in the teens, late teens range is safer. But either way, still undervalued at RB26. Do you agree with that, Coop?
Yeah, RB26 is kind of wild here. Like, and again, this is why you listen to the whole podcast. Because we just talked about why mobile QBs aren't great. But that really boils down to high end upside. Like when you're talking RB26, it doesn't matter, right? We look at, and when I look around and you look at the guys that we like that have similar behind the scenes metrics to Dobbins, like how can you sit here and say that you like Derrick Henry? How can you sit here and say that you like Nick Chubb, but you don't like J.K. Dobbins? Because the things that we love about these players, the broken tackles, the breakaway run rate, right? The fact that a monster percentage of this guy's carries go for like 15 plus yards, that he's one of the few guys that can pull a Raheem Mostert and score a 70-yard touchdown. Like these are the things that we love about Nick Chubb and we love about Derrick Henry. And even Nick Chubb in his bigger role with Kareem Hunt on the back burner didn't really catch much more than 30 something passes. So if we love those guys so much, then why is J.K. Dobbins being drafted as an RB3? I think this is absolutely due to be corrected before the season starts.
And if you, one cool thing you can do with Fantasy Pros rankings is look at, you know, more recent rankings. You can sort of designate like a cutoff date of when you want to see since these rankings were last updated. And if you look at just the experts who have updated this just in the last couple of days, he's already bumped all the way up to 19. So I do think that this is going to become more and more of a thing where he starts to move up these rankings. But yeah, I mean, right now, if you're doing like best ball leagues super early or something crazy, some of these guys are coming in at real values. Let's move further down the list here. Rashad White, Leonard Fournette, obviously now Tom Brady, we know for sure is not going to be back in Tampa Bay. Currently, White is RB38, Fournette is RB28, but I think a lot of us are assuming or at least hoping that White is going to get more of the workload this year, maybe a 60-40 work split with White getting 60. If I told you that I could guarantee that sort of work split, where would you be ranking both of these backs, Coop?
I would still be hesitant. And I'll tell you what the Rashad White, what he represents to me is the player that I have probably the biggest disparity between my, or at least the young back where I have the biggest disparity between my dynasty rankings and my redraft rankings, where I love this player in dynasty. I think that he has the skill set we like to see, that even the Alvin Kamara type skill set where, you know, I guess we did kind of sit there and look at Mark Ingram, which would be the Leonard Fournette in this situation. And maybe it scared us a little bit, but Leonard Fournette, I don't think is going anywhere. I think they have to trade him. If they cut him, they have $5 million in dead cap. If they trade him, it's only $3 million. So that's a little more palatable, but I don't see any reason why they have to force this issue to get rid of the guy. And if they don't, I don't love the split, even when it's 60-40, because Fournette did get more pass down work. He got more goal line work. I'm just not sure kind of the issues that we had with Tony Pollard and Zeke Elliott. I'm not sure what part of the game Rashad White is that much better than Fournette at, where if there's a pass interference in the end zone, they don't send Fournette down to punch it in. They send White in. Or if it's a third down play, they don't use Fournette. They use White. Like he needs to carve himself out a role first before I can start moving him up higher. But I mean, RB38 worth a stab. I worry a little bit. I'm not sure if you guys feel differently.
Yeah, Erickson, can you make sense of this backfield for us?
I mean, I personally have them flipped. So I have Rashad White at RB26 and Leonard Fournette at RB38. Like Rashad White, we saw during the second half of the year, he was the 1A in the backfield. Now, Fournette was apparently dealing with some like foot injury or whatever. But how is this going to play out with Tom Brady no longer there? You know, Fournette kind of seemed like Tom Brady's guy. So if Fournette is now complaining about, hey, why am I not getting all the touches? Why am I not getting all the targets? Under a new offensive coordinator, under a different quarterback, I think that he might look. We saw this guy get basically left for dead in Jacksonville because of attitude. So if he has a bad attitude, like I could see them moving on from him. They have a potential out in his contract. The Buccaneers are 31st in salary cap space available. So they don't have a lot of necessarily money to move around. And they invested a decent draft capital into Rashad White. And I thought White was just better as a rusher than Leonard Fournette was last year. I mean, just the last game. You look at Fournette had 5 carries for 11 yards. And White was 41 yards on 7 carries in the playoffs. Like, in the playoff games that they had to win, like, they were using Rashad White more than Leonard Fournette. So I think that the Allegiance, you're going to see more of White, even if Fournette is still there. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if Fournette's on a different team by the time the start of the 2023 season kicks off. So I'm definitely on the White side, and I'm definitely buying him at the supreme discount and just not really wanting much of Leonard Fournette.
I want to talk about some more of the young guys, and it kind of works out well because in the early 30s of the ECR rankings right now, there's a lot of players coming off their rookie seasons. Second-year running backs, Brian Robinson, James Cook, and Isaiah Pacheco are back-to-back-to-back at 31, 32, and 33 in the early RB rankings in half PPR. So I want you guys to rank those three sophomore rushers. Erickson?
I have them exactly the way you listed them out. So Brian Robinson, James Cook, Isaiah Pacheco, that's how I have them ranked. Pacheco, I keep on to keep moving up as I see him play in the playoffs and the team leans on him more and more. Just the fact that he runs like a psychopath, like he runs like he's never going to play ever again on every single carry, I just absolutely love. But he's still a 7th round pick, and he doesn't have any draft capital to fall back on. Whereas Brian Robinson, I mean, he's going to be the starting running back for the Commanders next year. Like, and they don't really have a reason to invest in the position because they have Gibson as well. James Cook, I'm definitely unsure about, but if the team doesn't bring back Devin Singletary, then that would theoretically slate up James Cook to be the RB1 in the Bills offense.
Coop, how are you ranking these three?
Yeah, so I love what you said about Isaiah Pacheco. He's got a little bit of that Javid Best in him, where like he'll lower his head, or you know, if there's nowhere to go, he doesn't go down or goes out of bounds, he'll just jump. You know, just like he's got that crazy look. But that's what you want to see for a guy towards the bottom of the depth chart that is working his way up. The way I have it is very similar to what you have, but I have James Cook as the swing, where and you kind of mentioned too that if he gets the role, he would be the top guy, right? Or he could swing all the way to the bottom if they go out and they bring in a stud like a Josh Jacobs, or they draft a Bijan Robinson. But I mentioned that I have a list of articles that I love and I keep, like, for instance, your article on the mobile QB impact on RBs. Have that saved in a folder, right? Andrew Erickson. I have Sean Siegel's fragility of running back saved from 2013, right? The original zero RB article. Another one I have saved that everyone should check out, Scott Barrett wrote an article on the value of receptions versus carries. And that changed the way I think about everything, because he proved that a target, even in standard, is worth 1.39 as much as a carry, and in full PPR, 2.74. That means that Austin Eckler's 125 targets is basically the equivalent of 350 carries in this league. So for me, when I look at these guys, now Brian Robinson was basically a zero in the pass game. Isaiah Pacheco, he only had like 14 or so targets during the season. This past week, we love what we saw. He got like 6 targets, but we don't know if he's going to have that role. James Cook, at least, I think, is going to profile as a pass catcher. That's why for me, I got to swing him to the top if he's going to have an actual role. And if they bring in Bijan Robinson, I have to swing him all the way into the dumpster. So that's how I look at those guys.
So the other second year running back who I assume is ahead of all of these three guys for you is for all, both of you, I guess, is Tyler Algier. Really strong finish to the 2022 season. But again, in talking about draft capital, not quite as low as Pacheco, but still only a mid-round pick in last year's draft. You sort of mentioned, Coop, the Breece Hall coming in when we were all excited about Michael Carter, who was a 4th-round pick and had looked good. So do you see a potential scenario where that plays out the same way, where Algier is a guy we all really like and then kind of falls off? Or did he just look good enough that you're not really concerned about that?
Yeah, anytime that you have guys that don't go in the early parts of drafts, It concerns me, right? Because Michael Carter, 4th-round pick, gets erased. I mean, Trey Sermon was a 4th-round pick, and he lost out to a 6th-round pick in the same draft, right? So it does concern you. That said, this player, when you talk about independent metrics, like what he's doing independent of his team, independent of his line, he was arguably one of the best guys. I saw Ian Harditz posted a tweet the other day that said, of all the backs, when you look at yards after contact numbers, 77% of his carries had 2+ yards after contact, which is the highest in the league. Next highest was AJ Dillon at 75. So when you look at a guy like Todd Gurley, where his early, you know, his rookie year, he got 200-something carries, 270 carries, and only went for 800 yards. They went out, got Andrew Whitworth, improved the line. Very next year, he had the same number of carries. He went for like 1,500 yards. That's what happens. These guys that are good on their own, if you can improve the team, improve the line, now all of a sudden they're studs. So if they don't do anything, I'll have Tyler Allgeier pretty high because he was impressive on his own. I mean, the yards per contact started 3 yards deep in the backfield with this guy because they, you know, the team wasn't that great. But if they can clean it up a little bit, I'll be pretty excited.
And Erickson, you have Allgeier currently ranked as a back end RB2. So I assume you're not overly concerned about this possibility.
No, I don't. I think that he's different from Michael Carter in a couple aspects where he was a bell cow at BYU. Michael Carter was Javonte Williams' backup, you know, committee. He was never a full-fledged bell cow, you know, in college. And, in, you know, he had a couple spurts in his rookie year, but I think Allgeier was better. Allgeier was PFF's highest graded rookie running back this past year. Not Kenneth Walker, not Breece Hall, Tyler Allgeier. And that puts him into the territory, which is what I was talking about last year about being Ramondre, because that's what Ramondre was, PFF's highest graded rookie running back. That puts him in the territory with Jonathan Taylor, with Nick Chubb, with Kamara, with Josh Jacobs. Like, the grades mean something. And I think Allgeier did enough, especially down the stretch where Patterson was healthy and they still went with Allgeier. Patterson, to me, acts as a firewall because they're invested. They already have the veteran. Like, they don't need to add the Cordarrelle Patterson because they already have him on the roster. Whereas with the Jets, Michael Carter was the only guy. So they were going to naturally add some type of running back to the roster. Whereas the Falcons, they already have Cordarrelle Patterson under contract. They're already paying him like a decent amount of money. Why would they invest in another running back when they already have two good running backs on their team? So for me, I think the guy to be worried about here that you didn't mention is Dameon Pierce, honestly. Like, he's the second year running back that I am sell. Like, that's personally what I would do. Because I think he's actually ranked the highest in ECR. But brand new coach, no idea. He was a fourth round pick. So I would be way more concerned about Dameon Pierce getting kind of supplanted by a running back with higher draft capital than Tyler Allgeier.
Yes. So those first three, remember, were in the early 30s. To compare, Allgeier is at 27 right now. Pierce is all the way up at 20. And then, of course, you have, you know, Hall and Walker in the top 10. So, yeah, Pierce is definitely sort of in a tier of his own, at least in terms of the early consensus rankings within the industry. Do you think, just quickly, like, on Pierce, since we didn't have a question on him, would you be more worried about like a Bijan being drafted there or more of like a veteran coming in and kind of competing with him?
I mean, both. I mean, they're not going to bring back Rex Burkhead because he was part of like the previous regime. They don't really have that many other running. I mean, Gary Ogunbowale, like they're a team that has to add running back bodies. And that can be in a lot of different forms, whether it is a draft pick or it is a veteran. So, and there's a lot of veteran running backs that are going to be available to be scooped up. So Dameon Pierce, I would be very concerned about, you know, how he will do with competition.
You don't think they're going to ride it out with Rex Burkhead one last
time? Next Patriots, great. So Coop, you mentioned when talking about Allgeier, the yards after contact, you mentioned AJ Dillon. I want to wrap with him. Very popular breakout pick going into last year's drafts, and he's now dropped to RB28. He's at the top of tier 5 going into the early 2023 RB rankings. Will you be in on the potential upside there? I mean, former second round draft pick by the Packers, obviously Aaron Jones, another year older. You don't really know what's going to happen with Rodgers. He also only rushed for 70 plus yards twice all season. So kind of where do you land on him? Is he a stay away or are you in on the upside, Coop?
Yeah, this is like one of those joke articles where the headline is like, man upset that backup running back he drafts in fantasy ends up being a backup running back, right? Like, it's, yeah, dude, like you, like, I know we get really excited and we're trying to find that edge, trying to find what's different. And, you know, that can happen sometimes where you take this guy hoping the starter gets hurt or the car's out of roll and it doesn't happen. That being said, one of the numbers I brought up a couple times on the show is what percentage of those carries inside the 5 you get. And I like percentage better than raw numbers because, you know, you look at Jamal Williams, he gets 28 of them, but still Kenneth Walker got all of his versus, you know, Jamal Williams got, you know, 28 of 30 something. They had a ton of them. When you look at AJ Dillon, he was actually 8th in that stat, you know, within the top 10. And if you take out guys like Josh Allen, he moves a little bit higher. Like, he was getting a good chunk of those carries inside the 5 yard line. It's just that the Packers didn't really have many. Like, so I think he's got that role carved out. It's just a matter of what they're going to do to supplement that. If they bring back, if they bring back Aaron Jones, then yikes, right? That's a rough situation. If they, you know, move on from Aaron Jones, bring in somebody that's just a pure pass down guy, then I'll be interested in AJ Dillon. But again, there's so many moving parts. Is Aaron Rodgers going to be back? What direction is this team going to go in? That right now I just have him. He's such a wait and see. I just move him down. I move those guys down when it's wait and see, because if I'm going to do an underdog right now or a best ball right now, I'm not going to pick guys that I don't think are terribly exciting and are also up in the air, right? If I'm going to take a wild stab, I'm going to draft a Bijan Robinson, one of these rookies, rather than taking a guy that, you know, we're hoping he becomes a plotter that gets a little more.
You know? Erickson, AJ Dillon, De'Aaron A.
He's too expensive at RB28. I have him as RB31, and I don't even feel great about that. I think that he's someone that you're just hoping gets discounted significantly because he has a red zone role. Like, that's how you see him hitting, kind of like last year with Jamal Williams. You know, Jamal Williams got so cheap, and then it's like, wow, he scored so many touchdowns. Like, that's in the range of outcomes with AJ Dillon. But, you know, let Rodgers get traded first. You know, then everyone's gonna be like, oh, the Packers offense is gonna suck. It's gonna be horrible, even though it was just like average last year. And then, okay, AJ Dillon in the 10th round. Okay, cool. Like, Aaron Jones gets hurt all the time. Like, then I'll take him. But RB28 is too expensive.
That's going to wrap things up for us. Thanks to both the Andrews for joining me today. And please don't forget the opportunities we mentioned with FanDuel and Air Medcare Network, plus our NFL Draft and Senior Bowl coverage. For the guys, I'm Ryan Wormley. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home, where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
Fire the grill and fire up the party. Get the Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. Go from low and slow on smoke boost mode at 180 degrees all the way to high heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full grate sear zone so you can put more food on the flame. Food will look as good as it tastes. This grill is hot in 15 minutes and cleanup is easy. You can also add a heavy-duty rotisserie or rust-resistant griddle insert to up your game. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill.